Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk. And today on the docket, first, another delay in the sale of 2825 Saratoga Trail. Next, Michelle Carter isn't getting any love from the United States Supreme Court. An update on the Heidi Broussard case, and an expert weighs in on his psychological analysis. A Harvey Weinstein update, as well as the dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. If you have not already subscribed, we would sure ask you to do so. If you'd like to receive notifications, hit that little bell. And if you like what we talk about today, hit the thumbs up. And please leave us a comment because we do care what you think. First, on the docket, 2825 Saratoga Trail, delayed yet again. For those of you who don't know, this is the home where Christopher Watts resided before he decided to kill his entire family and unborn child. Well, the public foreclosure sale has been delayed now for months and months and months. It was supposed to go on January 8th. It was delayed, and now we're scheduled again for February 12th. Now, the attorney who is representing J.P. Morgan Chase, the owner of the property now in foreclosure, will not give any reason why the delay continues. I personally believe it has something to do with trying to get judgments as it relates to the civil case to see who gets what of the excess after the mortgage is in fact paid off. We'll simply have to wait and see, just like everybody else. Obviously, the question is there someone that's going to buy this particular property? And then the question is, are they going to live there themselves, or are they going to rent it out? Are they going to scrape it? Are they going to donate it? What do you think should be done with the property? Next, Michelle Carter. For those of you who do not remember Michelle Carter, she can be a very mean person. In fact, she was so mean that she all but convinced her boyfriend/friend, Conrad Roy, to commit suicide. She all but said, "I hope you kill yourself," etc. She said she tried to save him at the end, but that's not what happened. He ultimately died. The state pursues an involuntary manslaughter charge, and she is convicted. Ms. Carter has appealed her case, but she sought relief at the United States Supreme Court in what they call a writ of certiorari. The United States Supreme Court gets about 8,000 writs of certiorari, or requests to the court to take the case. The Supreme Court takes the case usually if there's a split in the different circuits on the same law being interpreted different ways to resolve that, or if they believe it is of such great significance that, for lack of a better term, it needs to just be decided one way or the other. In this particular case, the Supreme Court can simply not issue opinion, and that's what they did. They just didn't. They said they were going to deny cert, and that's it. Case is over. The issue was going to be on free speech, that the words text were, in fact, protected by the First Amendment, and you can't hold somebody responsible for their words. Now, obviously, lots of people say lots of mean and nasty things, but you can't say everything, all right? There are what we refer to as, for example, true threats. You cannot threaten people, and the law is such, and I've done a lot of these cases recently. You cannot threaten people with the, and if you put them in fear, basically would a reasonable person believe that they were going to be in fear or harm based upon these threats, even if it's factually impossible or legally impossible for somebody to do what they are in fact threatening, okay? And it has to be, in this case, it's been up to the United States Supreme Court. It's called, one of the cases called Ilanis, and basically says it has to be your intent to put somebody in fear, not just that you said the words and they felt uncomfortable, they felt weird, they felt nervous. They have to prove that it was your intent as the writer of those words to put them in fear. And so the district attorney says they're not surprised in this particular case as it relates to Michelle Carter because her words were not protected under the First Amendment. Either way, it's done. She'll serve her sentence and hopefully be a much nicer person. Next on the docket, Heidi Broussard K. case update. Yes, another day has gone by and still no charges as it relates to murder. For those of you who are not familiar with this, Heidi Broussard was killed. The cause of death has been ruled asphyxiation and homicide. The main suspect in this particular case is Megan Faramuska. She's been charged with tampering and abuse of a corpse, but she has not been charged with first-degree murder just yet. Not a big rush, apparently, because she's already in custody. She's not going anywhere. There are probably mental health concerns, and the district attorney is still investigating to see if somebody else was involved. But, and as we see in lots of cases, the psychological world, people are bringing in their expertise, and there is an Asim Shah, who is the chief of psychiatry for Ben Taub Hospital and executive vice chair of community psychiatry at Baylor College of Medicine. And he told the Houston Chronicle that when a woman so desperately wants a child, she may take one from someone close to her. Now, we talked about this last week. This is what some doctors have referred to as womb raiders, where literally they take the case. There was the case in Chicago regarding Clarissa Figueroa, where she and her daughter, Desiree, were charged with murder as they allegedly ripped a baby from the mother's womb and then strangled the mother to death. There was also a case in North Dakota where Brooke Cruz and William Holm were arrested after authorities found a North Dakota mom, Savannah Graywin's newborn, in their apartment. Investigators later found Graywin dead and tossed near a river. Both were accused of cutting the child from the womb. We also had the case here in Boulder, Colorado, where the young lady went to purchase clothes, and the same thing happened. She was attacked. The child was cut from the womb. The child passed away, and the woman was charged with murder and is obviously in prison after a prompt conviction. So these kind of cases happen more frequently than one would possibly think of. But as the good doctor states to the newspaper, some women, whether it's some sort of traumatic event like a miscarriage or a breakup, that somehow they want a child so bad they literally become so desperate and focused on having it, they'll do anything to get a child, even kill. What do you think? Obviously, that's not normal behavior, but is that just somebody that really wants something bad, or is that somebody that has psychological issues? Let me know. Leave me a comment below. Next on the docket, an update on the Harvey Weinstein case. Just when you thought maybe things would get a little slower in the Harvey Weinstein case, after all, it is the second week of jury selection, and last week we had a case where the judge made an outburst about Harvey Weinstein using his phone. We had the defense team trying to recuse the judge because of the use of his phone. And now we have a situation where a famous model, I take that word famous to some people because I have never heard of her, but I don't really run in that crowd. So, but her name was Gigi Hadid. Gigi Hadid is apparently a supermodel. She is a potential juror, and when questioned by the prosecution and defense, she admitted that she had actually met Harvey Weinstein. At one point, she had met Salma Hayek, who is a woman that has said that Mr. Weinstein harassed her as well. But Ms. Hadid stated that she would be able to be a fair and impartial juror. Now, there's lots of speculation. Do you think he wants somebody that maybe knows somebody on this particular jury? I don't know. I don't think the prosecution would want her on there because they don't know what the interaction was with Mr. Harvey Weinstein. He may have been a complete gentleman. The defense would be in the best position to know, but you never know what the feeling may be, what the feeling the attorneys are going to get. I'm sure they've got juror experts there as well to try and figure out if she can be a good juror one way or other. We'll wait and see. They're starting to whittle the case down to jurors that have said that they can be fair and impartial, and that's all you need. Then you get them in there, and then you start whittling down further to get those 12 jurors plus the alternates that are going to actually hear the case. But the more interesting issue in the Harvey Weinstein case is that the defense attorneys want to exclude the press from the courtroom. No. Can't do that, okay? And I get why the defense is making this argument, but no. We have a right in the United States there. We have an open and public trial. That's a right that the defendant has, you know, because we don't want some trial taking place in some kangaroo court and they send you off to some gulag to, you know, re-educate you kind of thing. And it's there so the press can see. And to ask that the press be excluded because they're basically they're reporting on the case, no. Unacceptable. The defense should know better. The public has a right to a public trial as well. And as long as the press is maintaining decorum in that particular courtroom and not doing anything disruptive, they have an absolute right to stay and to be there. So, frankly, a little disappointed in the defense by even doing that. I get it. They're trying to say that their client is being prejudiced in some way. But guess what? The only thing that matters is whether the jurors are in. And the potential jurors in this particular case are being swayed in one way by the news media. Worst case scenario, they sequester the jurors, but you don't kick people out. Unacceptable. I've seen cases reversed where child witnesses were testifying and they kick everybody out of the courtroom because they don't want to embarrass a child witness. And the case gets reversed because the defendant is entitled to an open public courtroom. And you kick people out of the courtroom, you're violating people's constitutional rights. And the public has just as much right to a fair, open public trial as anyone. Next on the docket is our dumb criminal contestant of the week. And this particular dumb criminal contestant of the week, well, they didn't really do anything stupid, I guess, other than their poor choices of wigs. All right? Bad. Choice of wigs, not very flattering, that's for sure. But I get why they're doing it, right? So here we have an unidentified individual in the Charlotte, North Carolina era who likes to rob banks. And the suspect is believed to be a black man with a medium build in his 20s or 30s. Now, why would somebody pick a bad wig when it comes to robbing banks? Well, what is the one thing that the prosecution always has to prove, right? Identity. That's right. They have to prove that the person accused is, in fact, the one who committed the crime, not someone that looked like this particular person, not someone that used their identity on this particular day or even held themselves out as that particular person. They have to prove it's you. So if they have a disguise, it makes it much more difficult. So I get why our dumb criminal contestant is doing that today. But really, this person is getting the bad wig contestant of the day. Bad, bad choices. Could have gone so much better, so much better. Let me know what you think. But fashion faux pas are just as stupid as committing bad criminal acts that are just stupid. I appreciate you watching today. We know that you have lots of things that you could be doing. We also know that you have lots of choices out there. And so the fact that you take the time to watch our little channel, we appreciate it. We are humbled by that. And thank you. Have a great day.